This morning. So, if we remember where we've left off in Genesis 32, the last chapter that Zach was going over, we had Jacob wrestling with God, and he's on his way back to the land of Canaan. He's been away for over 2 decades now, and he's finally going to go home. And he originally left because there was some strife between him and Esau. He had secured Esau's birthright. Esau had given it up, but Jacob had done it a little deceptively, so there's a little bit on both sides there. But Esau had threatened that he wanted to kill Jacob. So Jacob had left, and he had been with Laban for over 2 decades. He had found his wives there with Leah and with Rachel. And now he's been told to go back to his homeland, to go back to the land of Canaan. So that's where we're picking up, is after Jacob has wrestled with God, and now they're going back home. So Genesis 33, and this is verse 1. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. And he divided the children unto Leah, and unto Rachel, and unto the two handmaids. So we saw the messengers warn Jacob that Esau was coming with 400 men back in verse 6 of chapter 32. Now, at that time he had divided the family up, but it was a strategic move. That way they could escape if Esau was going to be violent. Now he's arranging them so he can present them to Esau. He's going to show his family to Esau. But if we remember, Zach kind of went over that number 400 there, had a lot of ties to military. We see it used 400, 4,000, 400,000. It always ties to military. And here in this verse, it actually even takes it a little bit further to show us that this was set up to where Jacob would assume that this was probably going to be a violent encounter. Because the word men there in that verse, where it says 400 men, in the Hebrew, it's the word ish, and it's actually singular. So it would actually read more like 400 man, not 400 men. Well, what does that really mean? Why would it be singular? Well, think about how we talk about our military groups. We use singular words, a battalion, a platoon, a squad. So it would be a singular word. So 400 man is saying like a squad. So Jacob is going to think, we need to be careful here. This is set up to be something where we may go into conflict. So verse 2, and he put the handmaids and their children foremost, and Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph hindermost. So this is Jacob lining up his family to go and meet Esau, and we can see here that he is very much playing favorites. He's putting the family in order from his least to most favorite. What he's doing is he's sending the servants and their children first, so if Esau is being violent, his favorites, Rachel and Joseph, will have a chance to escape. So he's definitely showing favoritism there. Verse 3. And he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Now, if we remember back in chapter 32, we saw Jacob send his family first. Remember, they went to the ford Jabbok and he sent the family first while he stayed behind. He ends up wrestling with the angel of God until daybreak. But after wrestling through the night, he received a blessing from God. Now, he was wounded. It messed up his hip, and he ended up limping for the rest of his life. But he now has confidence that God's with him. He has that strength that he's drawing from God, not himself. So now he's willing to go first. He's going in front of the family and going to confront Esau man to man. He's not going to send anyone between them now. Now, Jacob bows down 7 times. And he's trying to show respect to Esau. He's showing him that he's coming in peace. He's not coming to try to start back up any type of conflict between them. But it's kind of ironic because the respect he's showing him here is how they would have shown respect to the firstborn. Well, if we remember, Jacob has the firstborn's inheritance. That's what started all of this. But he is showing the respect that he realizes Esau is the firstborn, even though he has the inheritance now. And remember that 7 in biblical numerics is spiritual perfection. It's the signature of God. So showing that God's kind of presiding over this. This is God's will being done. He's watching over what's happening. Verse 4. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Now where it says and kissed him there, this is one of the Hebrew words in the text that has what they call extraordinary points. If you study with the Companion Bible, you can find this in Appendix 31. They list all of these there. And what that means is basically just think of it has an asterisk beside it. And what that shows is that the Masoretes thought it should have been admitted. It shouldn't have been included in the translation. So it probably should have read, and fell on his neck and wept. They would have taken that part out. Well, who are the Masoretes? Why is that important? Why is it noted? They were a group of Jewish scholars between AD 600 to 950 that helped come up with the methods and traditions that they used to ensure the accurate copying of the Hebrew Old Testament into modern languages, into the Roman and Greek and English and all the different languages that were translated. They helped come up with the methods used for that. So they think that it probably shouldn't have said "and kissed him" there, that it would have just said "fell on his neck and wept." And like I said, the Companion Bible has the Appendix 31 that shows all of the different places they think something was added there. And there, I've got two different verses that show this same phrase in Hebrew being translated without the "and kissed." So this is Genesis 45, verse 14, where we see it says, "And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck." So no "and kissed him" in this verse. And then Genesis 46, 29, "And Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet Israel, his father," which is Jacob, "to Goshen, and presented himself unto him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while." So in both of those verses, it's the same Hebrew words. So we see this translated without the "and kissed" here. So just a little note that, again, we have to be careful when we're studying to rightly divide the word, to make sure of what's there, because there are problems with translation sometimes. So that's why it's important that we study and look at the words there and follow along with it. But either way, whether it says "and kissed him" or not, that doesn't take away the fact that Jacob and Esau are having a sincere moment. They're actually greeting each other. They're happy to see each other. These are two brothers that have been estranged and had problems for over two decades. So it doesn't take away from the fact that they are happy to see each other and trying to put the conflict behind them. So back to Genesis 33, and this is verse 5. "And he," that's Esau, "lifted up his eyes and saw the women and children and said, Who are those with thee? And he," Jacob, "said, The children which God hath graciously given thy servant." So Jacob continues to address himself as Esau's servant here. He's showing that respect for him and his desire for there to be peace between them. And look here that he also says that God gave him his family. So he's giving thanks and respect to God. He sees his family as a blessing. And we talked about this on Father's Day, actually. We looked at this verse, Psalms 127, verse 3. "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." So Jacob being a good example of that. Don't forget that our families are a blessing from God. They are one of the greatest gifts we'll ever have. And Jacob, even with all of the worry and stress he has of meeting Esau, remembers to say, "Hey, I was blessed by God with these." So verse 6, back in Genesis 33. "Then the handmaidens came near, they and their children, and they bowed themselves." So first, the handmaids come with their children and present themselves to Esau. And then verse 7. "And Leah, also with her children, came near and bowed themselves. And after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves." So again, coming in the order of least favorite to most favorite. That's not saying that Jacob doesn't love them all, but he definitely has his favorites. And where it says they bowed themselves in these two verses, this also could just be translated showed humility. So they're following Jacob's lead. They're showing respect to Esau and trying to show all of us are in agreement with Jacob. We're not coming to try to have conflict or problems. We want to build that bridge back between us. We don't want to have this problem. We're family. Let's get over this and get back together here. So verse 8, "And he," that's Esau, "said, What meanest thou by all this drove which I met? And he," Jacob, that's Jacob, "saying that these are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." Now, if we remember back to chapter 32 that Zach went over, Jacob kept sending all of these flocks ahead of him. He was sending oxes. He was sending the flocks of his cattle. He was sending servants. He sent them all as peace offerings. So Esau is asking, "Why did you send all of these to me? Why were they sent?" And Jacob's telling him, "To show that I'm coming in peace. I want grace with us, and I'm sending you a peace offering." Verse 9. "And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." Excuse me. So Esau is saying, "I have plenty. God's blessed me. The gifts are unnecessary." Verse 10. "And Jacob said, Nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand, for therefore have I seen thy face, as though I had seen the face of God, and thou wast pleased with me." So Jacob's refusing to take the gifts back, and he's asking Esau to keep them. He's saying, if everything's going to be peaceful between us, please accept the gifts. He's saying, I've wrestled with God. I feel like I have God on my side. I'm following his path. And I was led to come back to the land of Canaan and to send you these gifts. Please accept them so we can have peace between us. Verse 11. Take, I pray thee, my blessing that is brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And he urged him, and he took it. So again, Jacob saying, I've been blessed by God. I have plenty as well. I want to give this to you as that peace offering. And this is kind of showing some of the traditions of the culture of the time. This, and we kind of see this even in modern day. Someone gives you a gift, you're like, oh, no, you don't have to do that. And it's just kind of the pleasantry of how you go through those things. But in the Hebrew here, if we went back to chapter 32, Jacob uses the word minka, which is an offering to a superior. This is something that is given to someone. He's saying, I'm a servant, you're the oldest, kind of giving him that tribute. But he uses a different word here in chapter 33. He uses berakah, which means blessing. So we've got to tie that back to the fact that Jacob has the inheritance of the firstborn. And again, we keep talking about the names of God. When we saw the name of God when he took over the inheritance, it was Yahweh, the God of covenants. Here in this chapter is Elohim. So he's using a different word to keep Esau from thinking about losing that inheritance. He's not wanting to bring up the conflict between them, but he still has to give thanks to God for what he's been blessed with. And by using the Hebrew word barakah here, that means blessing, he's also in a way saying, I'm giving this to you as repayment for that inheritance. He's trying to have atonement for the problems between them. He's not giving back the inheritance, but it's kind of like a payment for it to make things right between the two of them. He's wanting to, again, to bridge that gap, to make sure that everything's okay and to get over the conflict. So the Hebrew word there shows his intention. Verse 12, and he said, let us take our journey and let us go, and I will go before thee. Now this is Esau speaking. He's saying, let's go together. We'll journey together. We're both going back to Canaan. And I've got my 400 men with me. He's got his military group, so he can provide protection. Let's go together. In verse 13, and he said unto him, this is Jacob responding to Esau, my Lord knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and herds with young are with me. And if men should overdrive them one day, all the flocks will die. Now, the correct translation there of if men should overdrive should just be if I should overdrive. So Jacob is saying, I've got my children with me. We've got all of the flocks of the cattle and the ox, and they have young with them. If I push them to travel as fast as you and your military men can go, it's going to kill some of my flock. I don't know that the children can handle it. So he's saying, I can't travel as fast as you would. Verse 14. Let me, Lord, I pray thee. This is Jacob, again, speaking to Esau. Pass over before his servant, and I will lead on softly, according as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children be able to endure, until I come unto my lord in Seir. So Jacob is telling Esau, go on ahead, we'll follow behind you, that way we don't hold you up, and we'll just meet back up with you in Canaan in Seir. Verse 15. And Esau said, let me now leave with thee some of the folks that are with me. And he said, what needeth it? This is Jacob. What needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. So the Hebrew for what needeth it just means what for? He's saying, why do you feel like you need to leave some of your men with me? We're fine. If there's going to be peace between us, you can take your men. There's no need for them to stay with us. Verse 16. So Esau returned that day on his way unto Seir. So we see Esau turning north. He's going to turning south towards Seir. So he's headed south. But now look here in verse 17. And Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house and made booths for his castle. Therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. Now Esau, that Succoth there means booths or shelter. So he's just saying, I'm going to a place and building these booths where I can house my cattle. But he's headed north. So he's actually going the opposite way of Esau. Now he just told Esau, we'll follow behind you. So this is probably showing that he's still a little uncertain that there's going to be peace between them. That there's still some, he's still thinking that Esau may turn on him at any moment. So he's kind of going the back way around and putting some space between them. Now, if we remember, Zach talked about them crossing the Jabbok. Where they're going here is located in the plain just north of the Jabbok and the east of the Jordan River. Just to kind of give us some the geography of where they're going to be here. And then verse 18. And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. So he is back in his homeland when he came from Paddan Aram and pitched his tent before the city. Now, Shalem means peace. So this may be the name of a city, or it may just mean that he came to Shechem in peace. They didn't have any problems on this journey. They were able to journey there with no issue. Now, if we remember, Shechem is the place where Abraham built the altar to God after he appeared to him and promised him the land of Canaan. So we're kind of circled all the way back around. Jacob is now back to that land of Canaan that was promised to their family. Verse 19. And he bought a parcel of a field where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Now, where it says the children of Hamor there, this is showing that the extended family is probably involved. The entire family had to agree upon selling this land since it's going to be part of their ancestral estate that they're selling off here. Now, Jacob's purchasing a plot of ground in Canaan, and he's probably following the same motive that Abraham had previously, because he's probably wanting a place to raise his family, to have a set place for them, and to have a family burial ground. We'll actually see this when we get to Joshua chapter 24, that more than likely that's why he wants to do this. And this is one of only three places that we see this money mentioned in the Old Testament. It also comes up in Joshua and in Job. We think it may have been a form of currency called the casita, but it's only mentioned those three times. That's the only time that money is mentioned. But there's some form of transaction here. It doesn't look like they bartered with any of the cattle. There was some type of money that was exchanged between them. And then to complete the chapter here, verse 20, and he erected there an altar and called it El Elohi Israel. So he's following Abraham's steps here, putting up an altar, and always remembering to keep God involved here. Now that El Elohi Israel, that translates to God, the God of Israel. So he is naming that altar the God of Israel. So as we looked over this chapter, it's kind of a short chapter, but there's a pretty important point here that after 2 decades of being estranged and having this conflict between them, when they finally, Jacob and Esau finally meet back up, they ran and embraced one another and wept. Even if the "and kissed him" part was not supposed to be there, they still are hugging each other and crying. These are two brothers that, no matter all the problems that they had between them, they were willing to put it behind them and were excited to see one another. And I think that's important for us to remember that one of the greatest gifts that we have through God is him sending Jesus Christ to be our Messiah so that we can receive forgiveness. And if God is willing to forgive us for all of our sins and all the things that we will ever do, we need to be able to find it in ourselves to forgive one another when we have strife between us. Amen. So just keep that in mind.